Hello, friends. This is Grace Hot Pants Langhine with your 11th episode of the Mullet Chronicles, where I read race reports to you. It's a spinoff of the Running Mullet podcast, where Eric Kosak and I talk all things running, from the business in the front of the pack to the party in the back, just like a mullet. Now, today's episode comes to us from Jennifer Henry, humble runner and race director from Pennsylvania. Jen race directs the very popular Buckridge Burn and recently took on the Iron Masters 50K. It just so happens that was my very first ultra. And this is Jen's story of her run at the Hellgate 100K in December of 2010. As always, a couple of notes before we get to the race report. It's a fun report because now it's 2024, so this report is 14 years old, and I will have a couple of updates at the end. Hellgate is a notoriously tough 100K in the Blue Ridge Mountains in Virginia with a cutthroat cutoff. That's your intro, and now let's get to Jen's story. Confessions of a Newbie by Jennifer Henry. A wise man once told me a great way to finish an ultramarathon was to start by telling everyone you know that you signed up. If you don't finish, then you are charged with the uncomfortable and humiliating business of describing your defeat ad nauseum. During the puniest moments, it's a great way to motivate yourself to keep moving. I told everyone I entered the Hellgate 100K trail race. Since its inception in 2003 by ultra running legend Dr. David Horton, the race has obtained an almost mythical quality and has earned a reputation as a rite of passage for local ultra runners, even attracting nationally recognized ultra talent. What is it about this race? Maybe it's the rigorous trail mapped within the Jefferson National Forest. It boasts 13,000 feet of climbing with its purported 66.6 miles. One never knows with Horton. The 12:01 a.m. start time is cruel and unusual, but the clincher is the curveball that Mother Nature herself throws at the intimately sized group of runners. Horton limits entry to around 125. It has been cold enough some years to render a few unlucky runners temporarily blind, corneal edema. There is nearly always snow or ice somewhere on the trail. One year, nearly every step of the 66.6 miles was slick. This race is not for the faint of heart. For years, I've crewed my husband Ryan while he raced Hellgate. I missed the last two races to have a baby one year and take care of said baby the next, as well as serving a support crew while he trained with Horton on the Hellgate course. Needless to say, I was exposed to the Hellgate culture over and over until I was finally infected. Waiting patiently for Ryan at the finish line one year, I witnessed a handful of extremely powerful women give everything they had to finish the race under some of the most treacherous trail conditions. I knew right then that it was something I had to do. I signed up for my first ultra in 2007, the Mountain Masochist Trail Run 50 Miler. At the starting line, I cried. Horribly unnerved, I looked around at the other runners and thought, I do not belong here. I can't do what these people can do. I thought I would feel the same way at Camp Bethel, the site of pre-race activities and the eventual finish. The cozy lodge is filled to the brim with incredible running talent, and I should feel intimidated, but instead, I just feel a calm certainty. I am an ultra runner. I belong in the woods. I am going to do whatever it takes to finish this race. Pack on, sweatpants off, headlamp, check. Serving as my crew, my sister Kim and her husband Zach drove all the way from Jersey City, New Jersey to freeze and chase me around the mountains. That's seriously crazy. They give me last hugs and words of encouragement as Ryan and I walk hand in hand to the starting line. Am I in denial? Standing here at this forest road gate with all these cold runners waiting to start, I'm not nervous or worried, just looking forward to running. My feet ache for the trail, and I'm eager to see what all the hype is about. A song, a prayer, and a tight assembly of the insane move swiftly into the woods. Ryan has decided to run these first 21 miles with me, partly to keep himself from going out too fast, and sweetly to sneak in an ultra date. As an ultra couple with two children, we rarely have the opportunity to run together. He keeps me solid during these wee dark hours. He's run this course at least 10 times, so I know we won't miss any turns. An absolutely demoralizing mistake I hope desperately to avoid. Ryan and I run these first 4 miles lightheartedly, and we're having fun trotting along the rolling terrain. I love sloshing through the chilly creeks on slippery rocks in the middle of the night. No joke, this is my definition of a good time. We zip past the first aid station and begin our climb up to Petite's Gap. There is magic here on this forest road. As we switch back up the mountain, we are captivated by the slow procession of headlamps above and below us, blinking solemnly through the naked trees of the steep terrain. Those lights above us seem to lift off into the sky, and more than once I mistake a runner for a star or a plane. The next two sections humble me. How I long for a warm, comfy bed, closed eyes, and a happy, painless hamstring. Thank goodness for Ryan, who patiently listens to my whining about headaches. We are both fighting miserable colds, bleariness, and hamstring issues, telling me every so often that he is impressed with how well I am running. His compliment warms me thoroughly. I know he means it. Long, dark climbs followed by longer dark climbs. Brilliant stars, Orion and the dog star, Sirius, hover over the southern horizon, gently illuminating the way towards an eventual finish line so many, many hours into the future. And then the swift, snowy single track sliding around switchbacks, grabbing saplings and flinging myself around tight turns. Narrow avenues of very cold, curled rhododendrons, large, slippery oak leaves. This is the thrill. This is why I'm out here. When I hear the falls at Overstreet, the forest road that leads to the fourth aid station at mile 21-ish, my pulse quickens. How many times have I waited in the pitch darkness during these horribly wee hours as a lonely crew? I remember loving the sound of the falls at the hairpin turn while anxiously scanning the steep hillside for the bobbing headlamps of Ryan and Horton as they picked their way down the trail. I would almost like to forget the wreck I was as I drove up to head foremost with my sleeping three-year-old in the front seat of Horton's pickup. The fog was so thick and I was so horribly sleep-deprived, I thought at any moment I would drive right off the mountain. But tonight I am running. I know I am going to clear the first hard cutoff. The hardest part of the course is behind me. And then I see those blessed lights. Next, the cheering, and there are my angels, Kim and Zach. Grilled cheese, tomato soup, and oh my, chocolate-covered espresso beans. I am a new woman, and I have already forgotten every doubting moment of the previous 6 hours, and now it's time for Ryan to bust a move. A nice mushy kiss, and he's off. I hope I'll always remember the silent glow of those snow-covered hillsides, reflecting the very first light. Is that Sharp Top? The Peaks of Otter? If I had more time to spare, I would walk and relish the changing shades of dusky mountains, transforming from black cutouts against the starlit sky into the folded, undulating fabric of this rhythmic love affair between plant and rock. But the reality is that I'm only 40 minutes ahead of cutoff, and I can't take any moment for granted. I have to keep moving. I pick up a couple of guys on the way to Little Cove Mountain Aid Station, mile 34.5, and we run near each other for most of the remaining miles. We don't spark up deep conversation or swap war stories. We're just there, moving, commiserating, sharing sights only runners are privileged to receive. A few bare hillsides and a few bare backsides. Who is this smiling woman who comes up from behind and blows through the Devil Trail, a slanting trail calf-deep in leaves, disguising treacherous, loose, fist-to-head-size rocks, like it's pristine, pine, single track? At long last, I hear the sound of cars on the highway, so this must be the last descent to Highway 43, a mere quarter mile from the aid station. My head is fizzy from the intense concentration it has taken to negotiate this section, and I notice my left iliotibial band is weakening. As I pull into the Bear Wallow Gap aid station at mile 46.4, a full hour ahead of cutoff, I forget all the discomfort when I hear, "Fuff! Go B-dub! Go funk!" Assorted nicknames I've acquired over the years, shouted by my very own cheering squad, now up by two with the addition of my super awesome friend Beth and her husband Brian. Their enthusiasm and words of encouragement melt the numbness from my mind. My sister takes my hand and leads me through the crowd of runners, busy fueling, to my own private aid station. I positively inhale the deep-fried French toast sticks and syrup that my dear and devoted crew picked up from the nearest Burger King. Orgasmic. The section from Bear Wallow Gap to Boblet's Gap, mile 52.5, is stunning. Amazing scenery almost the entire way. Is that Buena Vista with its impossible island mountains? The pleasant single track swoops in and out along a topographic line below this ridge to my left. I vow to return to the section of trail under less intense circumstances. I'm moving slowly enough now to enjoy the views. The strength in my left knee has deteriorated quickly and considerably, and I can only run short spurts of 20 or 30 seconds. I wonder when and if the ibuprofen will kick in. I wonder if this knee will get even worse. I steel myself to fight back the crowd of discouraging thoughts assembling in my mind. And then something happens. Either endorphins are kicking in or the ibuprofen, whichever it is, I find myself running solidly and blissfully, eerily pain-free for the last mile heading into Boblet's Gap, literally singing and dancing with a big smile on my face. I've been here before many times, and most runners look like absolute hell when they get here, but I am pumped and excited to tackle the next section. If I feel like this now at mile 52, I'm going to breeze through the remaining 2 seconds. My optimism vaporizes within the first 10 steps I take on this, the dreaded forever section, and I know I'm in trouble. The pain in my knee has returned abruptly and with a vengeance. Now I am only able to run 10 to 15 steps at a time before my iliotibial band, ITB, gives out. This should be killing my enthusiasm, but I have a lot of energy, thanks to my crew who's been feeding me constantly and is fairly warm with the sun now out, and well, I'm on a trail. Where on earth would I rather be? Sure, I'm frequently cursing out my ITB. How dare it keep me from running? I also try apologizing to it, but that doesn't work either. I try doggedly to keep up with these friendly folk making pleasant conversation, but to no avail. They pull ahead of me, and I soon find myself alone. Very alone. Somewhere in the hazy mileage of this section, I realize that if I don't pick up the pace, I may be in danger of missing the 18-hour time limit. There is no way I am going to let that happen, to let all these miles of adventure and hardship go to waste. I pick up a streamer from the ground and tie it around my knee in a desperate attempt to lessen the pain. This is going to take grit, a mastery of self, the creation of a new threshold for suffering. I strengthen my resolve, bite my lower lip, and begin moving a hair faster. After tearing up 3 separate 1-mile climbs, the trail levels out, and I see the looming wall of Black Horse Gap. I know I am finally close to the blessed last aid station. By the time I arrive at Day Creek, mile 60.3, I calculate I'll have at least 2 hours to do the last 6 miles if I can just keep moving. Who looks forward to a 3-mile, 1,200-foot vertical climb after having been on their feet for 16 hours? A runner with a blown ITB, that's who. I'm so happy to be climbing. It's hard, but at least it's not painful. I've caught up with one of my little Cove Mountain buddies, and we trudge up to Black Horse Gap together, sharing the view and some espresso beans to give us a kick. I can't believe it when we get to the top in 50 minutes, 10 minutes faster than I'd expected. We cross over the Blue Ridge Parkway, and I let out a whoop. We only have 3 miles to go. My elation is short-lived. Isn't this the point where I should be able to let it all out, to throw the last ounces of restraint onto the trail and haul ass down this mountain? But I'm going nowhere. The most I can manage now is a fast walk. My buddy trots beside me, but I know he needs to move, so I tell him to go catch the guy we can see ahead of us. It is here that my dignity finally suffers, as people that have been behind me all day, droves of them, come flying down the wide forest road past me. How many places am I losing? How many women have gone by? The wind picks up. The sun is setting over the Blue Ridge, and although it is something I rarely witness, I can't enjoy it now. it is a stark reminder of how high up we are and the understanding that I have to run 3 miles down this at a snail's pace is breaking my heart. I am despairing and dangerously close to tears. This is what I remember, that this is a choice. It is merely a race. There are people suffering in this world who would give anything to be out here in my pain. I'll get there and I'll be fine. The time between now and the finish is meaningless, a short breath in the ocean of air. I finally hit the gravel road to Camp Bethel, the final stretch, still being passed, still limping, gritting my teeth and forcing myself to run. I'm going to get there, damn it. The final blessed turn to Camp Bethel. How much I appreciate this little patch of soft grass we cut through. There are Kim and Zach telling me how awesome I am, running ahead to the finish and screaming my name, but I can't even look up at them. I am giving everything I have left to give. I'm nearly there. I see the glowing red numbers of the timing clock ticking away each strained breath. It's Dark and Horton asks for my number as I run up to the finishing line. When he hears it, he yells out, "Jennifer Henry! Oh my God!" And then I'm done. I'm not going to cry. I sink helplessly into my hug from Horton, the personal touch that is part of what makes this race worth it. And then there's Ryan, who I've been dying to see for miles and miles, and I can't help it. A few tears slide out before I can grab a hold of them. In a stupor, I walk into the lodge, and my beloved sister grabs my hands, unable to constrain her tears. She knows how much this means to me. She knows the significance of this moment. I am now a Hellgate finisher. I am now officially tough. So what now? I want to remember the whole experience, but I've already forgotten so much. I think I might have told myself not to do this sort of thing again. Most of all, I remember my resolve to strengthen and tune this incredible machine so that maybe next time it won't hurt quite so much. Although I felt a compulsion to tell people I signed up for Hellgate, I don't feel the same need to make sure everyone knows I finished. There's something different about me now. I can feel it, a deep-seated satisfaction, a quiet, an internal smile, a reinforced confidence. This is why I do this. This is why ultra running is one of the sanest things I do. So when's the next one? Thank you, Jen, for sharing your story. Jen has since run many, many ultras. She says she still does remember the glow of the snow-covered hillside, as she mentioned in the story, but she hasn't yet been back to the single track where she vowed to see again, other than her second time at the Hellgate course. She also says she's a much different woman now, but her love of trail running has only grown, and can't wait to hear more stories from Jen Henry. I hope you see her out on the trails. You can submit your own race reports to me on Facebook, Instagram, and therunningmullet@gmail.com. And you can listen to Eric Kosek and I every Monday at 7:30 p.m. Eastern, talking all things running at The Running Mullet. Thanks for listening. You are awesome.